Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spiritual Insights with Charlotte Spicer. Spirituality and Metaphysics Talk Radio, featuring A Course in Miracles, Dream Interpretation, Guided Meditation, and the Psychic and Metaphysics Free-for-All. It's your opportunity to consult with a professional psychic medium, discuss past lives, the chakras, and more. We are non-denominational, and there are no limits. Want to change your life? You must first change your mind. No matter your religious structure, cultivate peace in your reality through self-awareness with an authentic spiritual teacher. And now, your host, Charlotte Spicer.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Spiritual Insights. Our guest today is psychic author Robert Merry. His book, The Stars Still Shine, An Afterlife Journey, is an account of his son-in-law Michael's journey after passing away unexpectedly in June of 1997. While this account is specific to Michael's experience, it nonetheless presents concrete proof of the afterlife and its limitless possibilities for continual growth while in spirit form. The book is a compilation of transcribed messages from Michael from the other side. Included are artistic sketches of places Bob himself has visited in the dream state while visiting the town where Michael lives. The drawings are included for the reader to get a clear idea of the various places that exist and to illuminate the messages in the book. About Bob, Bob was a high school teacher. He became aware of his psychic abilities when he discovered he could read people and objects. By holding pens belonging to his students, he was able to accurately describe their homes and locate lost assignments upon request. He could also sense when students were heading for trouble and guide them in a more appropriate direction. As one student confided later, quote, "You were the only teacher I had who cared enough to convince me that I'm a worthwhile person." Wow. Spanning more than 30 years, Bob's background and experience make him uniquely qualified to write these messages from beyond. He has the ability to raise his vibrations so as to hear the spirits of crossed over people. He is conscious and quite aware of his surroundings while he writes. He has developed the ability to slow down the messages and write them accurately. This is not automatic writing, but rather transcribing what he actually hears. To learn more while you're listening, visit the website at thestarsstillshine.com. There you can read excerpts from the book, learn about his online magazine, join his mailing list, and so much more. Bob, welcome to the show. It's so great to finally have you on the air with me.
Well, thank you. That was a wonderful introduction. Thanks very much for that one.
Oh, you're welcome. I like to give people a very clear idea of what they're about to experience in listening to the show, because I make it as much of an experience as possible so that we can all learn. And as the intro said, it's all about cultivating peace in your life. And this is very important because in reading your book and in reading Michael's messages, it's the best way I can describe the best way I can tell people, read this book so that you get an idea, because I can describe my own experiences of what's over there. But this is so much more thorough. And so if I would like to use this as a teaching tool, if you're okay with that.
Well, I'm fine with that. Everybody
okay.
Is fine with that, including Michael.
Yeah. Oh, hi, Michael. Forgot to say hello to Michael. And
well, Michael said he wouldn't miss this for the world.
Oh, really? Ooh. Yeah. I'm waving to him. I think
He's waving back. He's not
yeah.
giving you the Bronx cheer or anything like that. He's waving
yeah.
back at you nicely.
It's suddenly very cold in here. I think he's standing beside me, touching my hand. It's dedicated to his daughter, Emily. So is this segment. I'd like to dedicate it to beautiful Emily. But let me ask a little bit more about you and your experience before we get started, Bob. So tell us about what it was like to be a high school teacher and then suddenly know the truth beyond the facade that a teenager can have.
Well, as you probably are aware, and a lot of people are aware, that the teen years are very upsetting and very rewarding for a lot of children. I guess they can be called children and teens. And I was trying my very best to help them succeed in not only in the high school subjects, but in life. And respect, I found, was the one of the keys. Keep respecting the other individuals, and this is one of the keys to a better and a happier life.
Hmm.
So I found a lot of teachers, even though I don't want to speak negatively of teachers, but a lot of teachers didn't really want to be there. They had the original bullying was, I think, started by some of the teachers who had problems of their own and took it out on the kids. But I tried to stay away from that. Well, I did stay away from that. And as a consequence, I think made a few good friends. Not converts, not at all. I wasn't trying to convert anybody. But
right.
a few good friends that even contacted me later on in years.
That's great. Yeah, I agree with what you said. You know, bullying, it's such a difficult topic. But school is an ego battleground, and I found in my experience that the teachers were just as troubled as the students because they still had those experiences alive and active in their minds. And I've seen some pretty brutal things, and a lot of it aimed at me, unfortunately, but I think with awareness and understanding we can forgive and get over that type of stuff. But I'm glad that you were able to secure a peaceful niche in school. And so moving on from this time in your life where you basically realized you were psychic, there was a series of coincidences that led you to very special teachers. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, when I found out I was psychic after reading a few books and trying different things, you know, astral travel, and ended up with a stiff neck instead of doing the astral travel, but then I found I could do readings for people, taking objects. I think
right.
The official word is psychometry, but I could
yes.
do that. So then I went to, it wasn't synchronicity, but people gave me addresses and names of people that would help me. They were going to be teachers, or were teachers of the psychic era, or psychic realm, shall we say. And then
mm-hmm.
I went to these people, and they said, "Well, Bob, thank you for coming, but you're not ready." I said, "I beg your pardon, aren't you giving courses?" And they said, "Yes, but you're a wild psychic. You're not ready yet." And I said, "Could I ask a question here?" And they said, "Certainly." I said, "What's a wild psychic? I mean, is somebody tearing their clothes off, running down the streets, or what is it?" They said, no, somebody doesn't have control. And I said, "Well, okay, next question is, when will I know?" And they say, you know, the sort of the philosophical answer, "Well, you'll know when you know." So
okay.
that didn't really satisfy me. So I hung around a lot of, not hung around, but I went and visited a lot of spiritualist churches to see if I could get some messages. "Hey, somebody give me a message somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Help me here, folks." And I didn't really get a message that way. I did some trance work in there, and the bringing through different people. In one case was a monk, and did some healing on somebody with I had my eyes closed at that time. Anyway, make a long story short on that end, I went back to the people that were giving the courses, and they said, "Yes, you're ready." And I said, "Okay, now what?" And they said, "Well, just we'll come to our courses." So
okay.
I spent 3 years... 3 years taking evening courses and that, and got a non-academic degree in Adept of the Lesser Mysteries, and learned all about a lot of different things in the psychic
sure.
realm and the spiritual realm. And so I went on from there.
How did it differ from your childhood? Because you seemed to go from 0 to 100 to where, "Oh, I think I'm psychic," to really making a commitment to this. What was your childhood like? Did you grow up in a religious household, or non-religious or spiritual? What was the environment like?
Well,
that
no,
helped you be
my,
so
my
accepting?
Father, my father was a teacher, a guidance counselor at one of the local schools, and I went to Sunday school. And quite frankly, my first few experiences at Sunday school were quite frightening. I was told, first of all, that I was, you know, everybody looked at me and pointed at me and sang a welcome song, which didn't make me feel very welcome, and sort of
right.
you know here he is, we're pointing out this new sinner or whatever he's meant to be. And so I wasn't really that all that happy. It was a Protestant church, United Church of Canada, actually, it's the name. And so I didn't have any psychic ability as far as I knew at that time, or mm-hmm. it didn't come through. I had a sort of normal childhood, if anybody's childhood could be called normal these days. But I did that, and I didn't really discover anything to do with being psychic until I was in my, I guess, my 30s.
Oh, wow.
As
okay.
As far as age goes.
Yeah.
I always felt that I was, somehow I was a wise old soul somewhere, even as a kid.
Yeah.
I thought I was somebody that had wisdom, and not in the sense of spouting, biblical verses or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt that way. And
yeah.
It didn't really manifest itself until later on in life.
Yeah, and it's hard to describe the way you felt when it's... I always felt like this, a much larger person trapped in a child's body, unable to do the things I knew I could do. And then I went to Catholic school, so I was asking questions the nuns couldn't answer, and I was in trouble a lot. So that was confusing, you know? So Mother Superior made a deal with me. She says, listen, if you have a question, come to me. Don't question sister in front of the other children, because we're trying to teach them how to behave. You know, and she gave me this beautiful explanation. I said, well, why didn't you just say that in the first place? Like, you know, because I was looking right through what was being said. Like, I don't know, that just doesn't seem true to me. Like, don't you tell me the Bible's not true. I said, well, that's how I feel. Anyway, so eventually you went on to initiate a series of very successful adult education classes. You called them Introduction to the Occult. Ironically,
yes.
You taught them at the same, for the same school board that you taught the high school students.
That's in. Right. That's right. And well, as an aside here, one of the teachers who was conducting these adult education courses said to me, he said, Bob, you're quite good at this being psychic. And I said, well, yeah, okay. And he said, how would you like to teach a course on it? And I said, well, okay, yeah, why not? And he said, and by the way, we have another course that we have to have, and that's Introduction to Design, Interior Design. And I said, I don't know too much about interior decorating and things like that. And he says, oh, here's a book. And I said, okay. So I taught a course at the same school. I taught two courses.
Okay.
One course was on interior decoration, and one was on interior mind, I guess.
There you go.
Introduction to the occult.
The correlation.
So it was quite successful, and I didn't really have an outline of what I was going to talk about, so it was sort of ad lib, but it went very well.
Those are some of the best ones.
Yes.
I find
the
more you prepare, it becomes mechanical. If you just let it flow and just basically channel the information, it's amazing when you hear what you said, you know. I'm curious, how did this get into a school board, though? How does the school board approve a title such as Introduction to the Occult? Because for many,
well,
the word occult is quite...
I don't know. That's one thing I didn't look into too deeply. I didn't want to, in case they said, oh, are we teaching that course? You know, I don't think they really checked their books and their
right.
And what they were doing. I think it got in, as the new expression is, under the radar.
Yeah. Well, that's why I use metaphysics. It's a little more welcoming, you know?
Yeah,
but
something
I'm
like that.
I'm not afraid of the word occult, but yeah.
But that was done, and it was done for, I think, yeah, it was 2 years.
Interesting.
And then not that they didn't want me to keep going. It's just that I ran out of, I don't know, energy or something else. Something
yeah.
was happening.
Well, maybe it felt complete and you had to move on, but you went on to do other great things. You gave talks about dowsing, psychism, and you explored the practical, the esoteric, and spiritual applications of dowsing. You did some of that
yes.
at Center
yes.
for Awakening in Northern Vermont. I douse. I'm a dowser.
Good for you.
Yeah, it's fun.
Good.
One of
yeah,
my favorite...
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, one of my favorite things to use that for when I was working a 9-to-5 job is I would make a pie chart with all of my coworkers' names. Because I like people, and I start everybody at 100%, and only until you really hurt me do I change my opinion. So what I did was I doused on everybody in the office to see who was trustworthy and who wasn't, and it was dead-on accurate. I was shocked, literally. But go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, what I did do is when I did some teaching at the Dowsing Association, Dowsing classes. We had the convention every fall, so I did some teaching on that, and I actually was surprised when some people were actually taking notes of what I was talking about. So
very cool.
I did enjoy myself and met some wonderful people and learned a lot,
That's the important thing. Well, I want to talk about the book, but first, let's talk about the website and everything you offer there. What can you tell us about this extensive menu you have?
Well, the website, as you mentioned before, is starsstillshine.com.
Mm-hmm.
And on that, we have sort of a map or directions on how to get to different aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about, recommendations on the different books that we have for sale, our own books, plus we do recommend other people's books and information. We have sort of a connection. We do have a connection there on that.
Mm-hmm.
But if people want to take a look and see what we've got, a lot of free information on it. The 9/11's episodes and information on that is quite extensive and is free.
Okay.
We didn't feel that we should charge for that one, so that is free. And all about people who survived, so-called survivals, people who were killed at 9/11, the attack on the Trade Center and the different planes, and the Pentagon and so on. And we have that on there, and what their feelings, the people who have passed on, crossed over to the other side because of the result of that, and what they feel about it. And so that's we find that quite interesting.
Yeah, and you have the Star Still Shine magazine.
All right, we started that magazine back in 2003, I think it is, and it's still going. We figured out the other day we have over 6,000 pages of information. We do have a subscription. It's not all that much. I think it's something like $15 for a year. Maybe it's half a year. I should go to check that up. But anyway, it's not that expensive. And there is one, you can pick out one free issue and get it sent to you. And to get a sample, let's see what it's like.
Right.
And of course, as I say, there's no obligation, even.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic. You also have Michael's musical tours, a wide variety of new instrumental music from the other side. How did this manifest?
How does that work? Well, what happens is I have a music program on the computer, and what I do is I channel in different people from the other side who are musicians. I'm not a musician. And I channel people, and they rearrange things, and there's probably maybe 200 or 300 different adjustments that I have to make to get the music to come through the way I want it to come through.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what this comes through, and it could come through in an actual music that can be played, or it can come through in... I can print out the music notes and so on.
Encourage everybody to check that out. That's amazing. You also have...
Yes,
go ahead. There's so much here. There's a goodbye message from a very dear friend of yours who passed away. They took time to send you a message. What's interesting, nature, spirits, and gardening, which is a big topic for me. I love that type of stuff. Alzheimer's disease in the afterlife. So September 11, Answers from the Afterlife. Very intriguing. And ask Michael view questions from readers and Michael's answers and how you can ask him a question about what you've read in the book, The Stars Still Shine, An Afterlife Journey. Well, that's a nice feature that you get to talk to Michael.
Yes, quite a few people use that, and I talk to Michael, and he says, sure, I'll be glad to answer, as long as I don't have to write it out. He wants me to write it out, so he doesn't want to do the writing. So.
Connect? Can he go find someone's loved ones and connect with them to bring them a message from their loved one?
Well, he can, but he doesn't like to do that because he said, he said he defers to me. He said, you can do a better job than I can.
Oh, I see.
So he defers back to me, whether he's not trying to be lazy or anything like that. He just says, well, you can do a better job at it. You can talk to people better than I can.
So. There you go. Well, you have a beautiful foreword in the book by Richard D. Wright and very heartwarming. The introduction is by Michael's wife, Lynn. How is Lynn? Is she doing okay?
She's doing fine. She's working for the Canadian government and Aboriginal and Northern Affairs.
Right.
And an officer of that. And she's doing very well. She's
good.
Been remarried to a psychiatrist. No, I'm sorry, psychologist. So a doctor. And they're doing fine.
Good, good. Tell you what, Bob, I want to really dig into the book, but first let's take a commercial break, and when we come back, we'll talk all about the book for the listeners to learn more about it, okay?
All right, very good. Thank you.
Okay. All right. We'll be right back, everybody, right after these messages. Don't go away.
Explore new areas of interest, expand your knowledge, and gain clarity about your life's purpose at the Ocala Enter Center. Affectionately known as OIC, the Ocala Enter Center, just 2 blocks south of Town Square, offers workshops, classes, healing meditations, and special events for the Ocala, Gainesville, and Central Florida spiritual community. Check out our calendar of events at ocalaentercenter.com. And if you're looking for a place for your next workshop or seminar, go to ocalaentercenter.com and give Gene a call.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat. I'm stupid. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. The only thing I didn't learn in school today is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Dustin Lynch. You don't have to listen to country music to know that life can be full of drama. Some of it you just can't control, like your girlfriend running out on you with your best friend. But there's some drama that you can skip, like the drama that comes with not having your high school diploma or GED. You just need to take that first step and find free classes near you. Go to yourged.org and start moving towards a brighter future and even your college degree. GED is a registered trademark of the American Council on Education. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Robert Merry, author of The Stars Still Shine, An Afterlife Journey, which is an account of his son-in-law's journey in the afterlife after he passed away unexpectedly. So let's go right there, Bob. In June 1997, this was a tragic car accident that Michael died in?
Well, yes. He was a pedestrian, and he was run over by a lady. We'll call her a lady now.
Okay.
But run over, and not only the front wheels, but the back wheels as well, everything.
Oh, my God.
And she later said she thought it was a bag of garbage. So that's how much sympathy and empathy we got from that one.
Oh.
Anyway, he was killed and died on the way to the hospital. Then it was what really was sort of, I don't know if we'd call it ironic, but it was at the end of their street where he was killed, just almost home.
There's a strange rule about that, yeah. How old was he when he passed away?
He was, I believe he was 33.
And his daughter Emily had just been born a couple months prior?
Just been born, yes. She was born on April April the 7th. So she was just born.
And it's a wonder how what people can survive. It's amazing. And how did he initiate contact with you?
Well, that was rather, well, I wouldn't say necessarily strange now looking back at it, but I was in their living room. Everybody else was, you know, looking after Emily or out having, the guys were out having a smoke, even if they hadn't smoked for years. And I was in the living room, and Mike came through to me. He said, look, I know you're psychic. I know you can't help me. Nobody can. He said, I didn't do this on purpose. Please believe me. And if you won't help me, I don't know what I'm going to do. He said, you got to help me. I said, okay. I said, just calm down. Tell me what you want me to say, or what you want to say, actually, is more like it. And he
sure.
So he said, well, I don't know what to say, but I just want you to know I didn't go disappear in a black hole somewhere and end up in a garbage dump or something. He said, I'm still thinking, and I still feel like I'm alive.
Mm-hmm.
So we went on from there. Yeah.
Did you,
so I
Bob,
told,
did, go ahead.
No, I said I told Lynn about that after our daughter, and then we went on from there. And then what happened is when we came home, we had to do, about 4 hours away from our daughter. Anyway, what we did then is every night I had messages from Michael. So I wrote them down about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, our time. And I wrote them down. It took me a couple hours. Then I phoned up our daughter every night and told her what I wrote. So we got this went on for about a year.
What was her reaction?
Well, she said that it was most comforting to her. And
yeah.
She confirmed a lot of the information that Michael came through with.
Okay.
She said, that happened and this happened. And, yeah, she was confirming everything.
Wow. And on a personal level for you, Bob, did you experience a lot of guilt for not knowing he was going to die?
Well, I don't know if I'd put it into guilt. More of a question of why didn't I spot this? Why didn't I happen? Why didn't I recognize this?
Mm-hmm.
And then I never really got over that, but I was able to help, and that helped me.
Right. Wow. Because a lot of times, not a whole lot, but sometimes I get a phone call with, I don't know, people, you know, in grief act strangely sometimes, and a lot of times I get a question, did you know this was going to happen? It's, you know, we can't prevent things from happening. It would rob us of our lesson. So, you know, it goes down the way it goes down, the way it's supposed to. But obviously Michael had an interesting reaction to his passing, and give us a synopsis of what he basically says he was experiencing. From what I'm looking at, he was pretty upset. He didn't want to go, and he says he didn't do it on purpose, like you said. What was his main message in the beginning?
Well, his main message was to say, hey, I'm still here. I'm still around. I can't really tell you why it happened.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know why it happened. He didn't really blame any of our family. And he didn't really blame the lady who happened to kill him. He said that she was just an instrument. Or he said that really didn't make it, the whole thing didn't make much sense to him.
Mm-hmm.
He said, here I am at 33. I'm just starting life, really.
Yeah.
I just got married, and then I just... What the heck? Why did this happen to me?
Yeah, yeah, no doubt.
So he had a lot of doubts, and he didn't know what to do. So he was guided by his Aunt Molly, who happened to predecease him, and she was there for him and helped him along, and also, I guess, act as a guardian or a guide for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were other people... Yes, there are other people, sort of like he called them the group or the committee
that
helped him and sent him on different trips after he recovered from his initial shock of going over there.
Yeah.
So he was sent on different trips with a guide, a person, or a spirit called Gabe, or short for Gabriel, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And we still don't know if that was the angel Gabriel or not. We sort of, a lot of things were left up, so-called, in the air.
Mm-hmm.
So he was taken on different learning experiences, which I found fascinating and interesting, that he would go to these different places. And usually, in one case, he traveled by his old Chrysler automobile that he had on Earth. And he had obviously it's a replica or something else, or maybe it's original, I don't know.
Yeah.
He traveled in different conveyances. In one case, he even took an airplane.
Oh, that's cool.
He didn't pilot it, but he said, you know, and then he was told, well, look, don't worry about it. You can't die anyway. You're already dead. Sort of weird humor going.
Yeah, right. Well, it's interesting. I want to explain to the audience that, you know, when you go to the other side, it's not like a void. It's not silence. There is more life than there is on this planet. There's more vibrancy, and my experience is that, you know, you can create the environment that makes you most comfortable while you're there. So in Michael's case, he wanted to maintain a connection to his favorite car, and he did that. I have a funny story about my mom where I went to see her. I can, you know, with astral travel, what we're talking about is, you know, you go out and about, you're basically in your astral body, and you can get to go see your loved ones if you're practicing this technique. So I went to visit my mom, and I got a little frustrated with her because she wouldn't sit still. And even when I'm giving a reading or in this encounter with my mom after she passed away, she was spinning around, and I know a lot of spirits like to do this. So they spin in circles really fast in this deliriously happy state with colors streaming from their fingertips. And it's like a demonstration of how free they feel and the love that now surrounds them. And so I got my mom to calm down. I said, I can't talk to you if you just spin like that. I said, so where are we? What are you building here? And I looked over, and I saw a jukebox all lit up, and I looked to my right, and there were these red stools with chrome trim around the seats. And my mom was running around and dancing and doing all this great stuff. And I said, well, this looks good so far. You know, I'm curious to see how it ends up. And I came back, and after I got up, I went into my kitchen, and I said, well, that was interesting. It looked like a jukebox, you know, like a dance.
Right,
thing,
yeah,
in
the 50s.
And
from
the 50s, and I said, wow, that's interesting. And then it hit me, and it like hit me like a ton of bricks. When I was 16 years old, I asked my mother. She died when I was 41. When I was 16 years old, I asked my mother, who had a very difficult life because of my father. I said, Mom, have you ever been happy? And she says, sure. I said, well, what was the happiest time in your life? And she said, going to the malt shop and dancing with my friends. They had this cute dance floor. And I remembered, I said, oh, she recreated that. So that's what they can do. And Michael shares a lot of information in the book about what he experiences and the people that he meets and the places that he goes. One of those places, it says, this section is entitled Entertainers and the Afterlife. And it talks about the place where a lot of people like to gather. Can I read a little bit of this?
Well, certainly, sure.
Okay, this is on page 13. It says, entertainers attract entertainers, and many of them live in the same space in the afterlife. There are no outward limits to this town where Michael lives, yet it appears as a small town to everyone who lives there and to those who visit. To those who live there, it's simply called the town. It has a central park with a gazebo, paths, ponds, well-trimmed bushes and trees, lots and lots of trees. There are no statues of any kind, no monuments to man or woman. The streets are like avenues, wide, clean, and elegant. They are lined with many different types of houses, shops, stores, and small apartments. No malls are to be found anywhere near this town. Every building has a personality of its own. Flowers are lovingly cared for, and each tree remains a classic living specimen. The local hospital is simply called the infirmary. It is a multi-story, modern-looking brick building that faces the park. The infirmary is unique because it has no emergency entrance. There is a driveway around the back of the building, but it is seldom used. This town has an opera house, a grand theater that would outshine any building on earth. Of course, it has the club, a showcase nightclub, small on the outside and large on the inside. A large library houses a museum and archives. Near the park and infirmary is the river, which flows gently past the wharves, docks, and gradually sloping shoreline. Riverboats, barges, and pleasure craft can be seen as they move and work, giving immense pleasure to those who see them and those who use them. And it just goes on to describe this. It says this is but a brief description of paradise. So there is choice. There is still free will, and people can have the experience of their choosing. And I'm sure you know this as well, Bob. They can enroll in universities and learn topics that they either already are drawn to or ones they already did. Did Michael mention doing anything of the sort?
Well, yes. He prefers actually to do what he calls hands-on learning, which means at one time, I think this is probably in book two, he goes and takes lessons on how to do hang gliding. So he gets involved in quite a few different adventures,
right.
And that's how he likes to learn. But there are places that are schools and nurseries. In fact, there's one place called the Diaper Ranch, where young children are arrive there. You know, everything from embryonic stage right on through up to age 2 or 3.
Okay.
And the name Diaper Ranch was called that by Michael, because it looks like a star, and it looked like an old ranch.
Interesting.
And so he said, "Well, it's a diaper ranch."
And this is where people who inhabit younger bodies go for deconditioning.
Well, the children who crossed over as infants and before being born, embryos and so on,
mm-hmm.
and they go to there, and the growth rate apparently is about 3 to 1. 1 year of our Earth years to there's a 3 in this accelerated growth process.
Okay, sure. Well, but actually, you know, and you channel so many people. It's very tragic when a child dies, but deep down we have to recognize that that's a soul inhabiting that body that is thousands of years old. So it can be deceptive when we attach to the image of a child, but the soul chose to have an abbreviated experience on this plane. But it's really cool that, you know, there's so many people over there who work as a team to help rivals and people leaving there to come here and people who go back. What does Michael describe a typical day to be like?
Oh, with Michael, right now he's up on a different level. He's on what is called the fourth level, so that's really a level of awareness. And he lives in a house that he's imagined, or people have imagined for him, a place called Sussex.
Okay.
And it's sort of as he describes it, sort of like a Victorian pile of bricks. That he's imagined, and he lives in that with he shares the house with a lot of other people, including Sonny Bono and Karen Carpenter and quite a few others that he shares,
mm-hmm.
you know, shares the house. He said they don't pay any rent either, so they don't have a right to complain. So
right.
He says besides that, Yeah, he said, I couldn't collect the rent anyway. It's God's house. So,
right.
So he's quite a humorous character. So anyway, still. His typical day is really not really typical, because right now what he's doing, his typical day would be going and helping some of these people from the diaper ranch. He is not allowed to adopt them, but he can. After they're a certain age, he can go and look after them.
Okay.
There was personal care at the sort of juvenile hospital or diaper ranch.
Mm-hmm.
So he does that, say, for the mornings. In the afternoon, he would probably go on different adventure with some of his friends. All these things can be telescoped into, you know, a few milliseconds, but he does that. Then in the evening, he usually goes in. Right now, he's been singing at the ballroom. He goes over with Karen Carpenter, and they sing in the Glenn Miller Orchestra has a whole ballroom, and they have this nostalgia craze, and everybody's it's filled up with boomers and people who were raised in the 40s and the 50s and so on, and like the Glenn Miller sound.
Right.
So he and Karen Carpenter are the featured singers. So that's what
Fantastic.
He does in the evening.
Fantastic. I'm asking him right now to tell Karen Carpenter. I said, "Oh, I loved her. You know, when I used to be a singer, and Karen Carpenter was one of my first favorite singers. The first voice I ever recognized was Paul McCartney, and I would call him that guy because I couldn't memorize his name. But I was a toddler, and I was like, Mommy, that guy is on the radio again, and I couldn't figure out how he was singing two different notes at once. It was harmony. And eventually I went up to specialize in harmony. But Karen is one of the people I would imitate, and Paul McCartney, when I would sing. Those two, my mother and Steve Perry. So he has a pretty cool itinerary. He could do whatever he wants. He's still got his music. He's got his car. But there's an interesting person mentioned in the book whose name, I guess, that he gave her is Dr. Yes. Who is Dr. Yes?
Well, Dr. Yes was a psychiatrist who lived in Toronto, Canada. I don't know what hospital he worked in. I think it was Sunnyside. But anyway, he's working up there, and he's sort of an unlikely partner with Michael and some of the adventures. Mm-hmm. And what happens, Michael describes the adventure the way he sees it. Then Dr. Yes, that's not his real name, of course, but that's what Michael called him. So Dr. Yes would come and give his straightened up version of the trip and add some, not necessarily sobriety to it, but add some, all right, keep it straight, as he would say.
Right. Okay.
So we often get two reports of the same trip, one by Michael and one by Dr. Yes.
Yes. Okay. And Molly, who is Michael's aunt who predeceased him, she helps him, especially in the beginning, helped him adjust to his new surroundings, and she also reports on his activities. What does she generally tell you?
Well, she usually gives a report on what Michael's doing in a sort of a very gentle way. She doesn't criticize anybody, but she gives a report, or did. She's not doing so much now because Michael has sort of moved on.
Yes.
But she was there to help him in the beginning, and is still around, but still she was helping him do not only the adventures, but helping him understand what was happening to him, why he had to do certain things, and then he went from there.
Mm-hmm.
So what he has now, who is acting as a guide and a housekeeper, is Miss Pemberton, who acts as his surrogate mother, his housekeeper, and ruler of the roost of Sussex, where he lives. So she's very well connected to all sources, and somewhat of a mystery, but tries to keep him straight. And she has one basic rule, and that if people come over to visit around she calls it dinner time, 6 o'clock, everybody has to sit down, and everybody has to be at that table.
Okay.
That's a rule that she insists on. And everybody said, doesn't matter if you eat or not, but you have to be there. This is a time for social activity. This is a time to spread the love. This is a time that people must have.
Yeah. Let me give everybody an idea of how this kind of comes through. On page 19, the date is June 9th, 1997. This is a message from Michael. Molly has me under her wing. She won't allow me to move very much. I'm so upset that I was stupid. I'm mad and very upset. I didn't leave on purpose. I don't really remember what happened except what Molly told me. I didn't see a white light or tunnel, just one hell of a lot of thundering noise. something like a train noise. It was so loud it drowned out anything else. Molly took charge and put me into a white bed, white sheets, white pillow, white bed. She said that it had curative powers, her words, not mine. I don't know what time has passed. Damn, I'm mad. And then in capital letters, damn, I'm mad. He did not want to go. Molly and a whole crowd are waiting to see me, so Molly says. She told me that she didn't want to get me mixed up. God, I love my family. I didn't mean to leave. I don't know what happened. I know nobody is going to believe this, but I can't think of any way to convince you it's me. That's that chokes me up, because you can feel his confusion. There's
yes.
Partial awareness, the angry, the... You know, when you're old and you die in your bed, there's a sense of relief that people experience. But when you're young and think you have your whole life ahead of you, and something like this happens, and you... That exit point opens up and you just go, you know? And so obviously this is very early on where he still didn't even know what happened to him.
That's right.
Right.
Yes, yes.
Unbelievable.
At that stage. So he was guided very gently by Aunt Molly and other people. There were doctors there that that tended to him, and they had these different, like big glass discs that were looking at it, Zora. Which
okay.
I found interesting, too.
That is interesting. And the noise I am familiar with, when you practice astral projection and you can get up and out, there's quite a bit of noise as the energy goes upward. And then I have an interesting story. When my mom passed away, I remembered a promise I made in 1993 because someone very close to me had died in a car accident. And I said, you know, I didn't know where he was. I couldn't connect with him. And, you know, he would touch my face and all that stuff, but I was upset that I didn't know where he was. So I made this promise that when my mother goes, I'm going with her to make sure she's safe, and then I'll come back when I know she's settled. 20 minutes after she died, I was looking at her. It was a fascinating process, and because I got to see her chakras close right before her body released her spirit. And I'm looking at her, I was like, wow, it's really interesting. Mommy's not in there. And then it clicked, and it was like, well, wait a minute, where is she? And I remembered my promise, and I managed to jump up and out, and I got there just as she had arrived. And it was so loud, and I said, no, we can't have this. Her eyes are so wide, and she's looking around, and there's this very tall man who I assumed to be her father. I had never met him. And he's got her by the shoulders, and he's going, Jane, it's me. Jane, it's me. And she's looking at him, and she couldn't recognize him yet. And then they stopped me. My guide, Ezekiel, steps in front of me and says, where are you going, Char? I was like, that's my mom. I have to help her. She's confused, and loud noise upsets her, and these people need to calm down. Why is everybody shouting? And he says, it's okay. She'll be fine. We have this under control. And I said, no, she needs my help. I can help her. I know her well enough, and I can make this easier for her. And he says, no, you have a job to do. You need to go back. And I said, no, Zeke, and I could still see all this going on. And he says, no, go back, and remember, no guilt, and then slammed me in the chest and threw me back into my body. I was furious because that was a really cool opportunity to really observe that stuff, you know? But,
yeah. But you know, what I find, too, is that at funerals and... of course, it's all tragic, and people are very upset, but they have no idea what happens on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
But people who have crossed over are just as upset.
Yes.
If not more so. And hey, wait a minute, folks! I don't want to leave, or maybe I do want to leave, but not this way.
Yeah. Like Michael Jackson.
What Michael said one time, he said, "Look at it this way," he said. You're sort of exiled to a foreign land that you don't know about. You're not allowed to pack anything. You're not allowed to even take your clothes. He says you stand there, and then you wonder where the heck you are. And then he said, then the confusion starts in, unless you have good people and helpers come in. So he said, let them help you. That's the time you need your help.
Yeah. Well, speaking of helpers, so you got shortly after this on July 1st, I'm skipping over several messages from Michael, but I wanted to demonstrate again like how this comes through for you. And on July 1st, 97, Molly comes through to give you a report about Michael. and it says, "Hello, Bob, it's Molly. I just wanted to give you an update. This is so funny." Because it's so real, because, you know, those of us who do this on a regular basis, yeah, this is pretty much, you hear it in your head, and you write it down or type it, just like they say it.
Yes.
Michael is still resting comfortably. He is awakened from a dreamless sleep at least four times during a 24-hour period. I think it's cute that she's given you time references to make sense of it in your head.
For me to make sense of it, yes.
Yeah, he is exercised at each awakening and, quote, fed twice during that time. And sounds like energetic healing that they were doing to him. He visits city parks, city streets with automobiles, all pass safely by. He has been taken to familiar areas to walk. People pass by and say hello, but there is no conversation other than greetings. The doctors in charge have told me Michael was suffering from severe anxiousness. He had anxiety attacks before he crossed over. These attacks came from deep-seated concern about being a good and kind father and about being able to provide more than adequate care for his daughter. He often felt too tired to even help out a little bit. Another issue was Michael was constantly trying to prove to others he was a good person, a lovable person, a talented person, a capable person, a family man, a successful person, and another Elvis. He was trying very hard to be all of these people. So he really had a fascination with Elvis. She says, when Michael tried to become like Elvis, he took the bad with the good. He tried to become that person and to make a change in his own personality. Michael wanted to become the person he idolized. He not only sang like Elvis, he wanted to become Elvis. The anniversary of the death of Elvis had an effect on Michael. This is interesting stuff.
Yes, what is more fascinating, it's all true. Yeah.
Unbelievable. I'm telling you, this book is fascinating because it's all from Michael and these other people, and they describe in detail where they are, what they're doing. And, of course, Michael was adamant about making sure that you all knew that he loved you and that he is still around. So you have volumes of information, and this is book one. There's a book two on the website?
Yes. There's a book two, and we're working on the book three. We can't tell you when it's coming out because it's completed, but it has. What we do is we print it out ourselves. We do all the book work and the publishing and everything else ourselves.
Okay, good, good deal. And as far as when that'll be ready is when it'll be ready when it's ready. And
yeah, that's our famous line too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I say build it and then announce it. You know?
Yeah.
Are you still in regular contact with him? What does he say recently?
Well, recently, I think there was a message on the web, on the magazine about his visit to with Dr. Yes again. This was in the last, I think it was the October issue. He was in heaven, of course, and he was visiting some place that was directed. He was directed to go to that place by Miss Pemberton, this housekeeper, mm-hmm. Dr. Yes. And they went and they met one of these deceased terrorists who tried to actually machine gun them with an AK-47 and throw grenades at them. And there was a lot of noise and terrified Dr. Yes and Michael, but they were able to not subdue him, but able to talk to him. Oh, yes, but what happened is actually Mohammed appeared in front of them and talked to this deceased terrorist. I guess he wouldn't consider himself a terrorist, but a disturbed person, and told him to... in a few words, to behave himself and not to act as an enemy to everybody, and to, in other words, to befriend the people that are there. And so the person who was subject to all this, this terrorist, did a 180, a switch and a turn, and said that I have been misguided, and I beg your forgiveness.
Wow.
So that was a real startling. That's what Michael's been doing. He's been doing these things, and he said, you know, folks, I'd rather not do that kind of thing. It sort of scares the life out of me.
Mm-hmm.
But he did it, and he that was one of the reports in the last E magazine, the October E magazine.
Oh, okay. So
he's still in touch. Yes.
Okay, and you put messages into the magazine?
Yes.
Okay, and you also have a blog and a new Facebook fan page.
Yes.
The stars still shine.
It needs to be updated, I think.
It's exhausting posting on Facebook. Don't do too much to push yourself on that end. I find that the right people find what you post. It's interesting, in the last entry from Michael, he's funny. He talks about Pemby and how she came over. He says, this lady introduced herself. She was a Mrs. Pemberton, and I guess still is Mrs. Pemberton, but uses the name Pemby. She told me she would be a mother, not my mother, just a mother. She would help with the housework, make meals, do laundry, and even nag me when I needed it. I don't know that I need a live-in mother, but I think I have one anyway. Diana said Pemby would help me with the newness and settle me into this level. And he talks about he doesn't know if he's going to pay her or what.
yeah.
I don't know if I pay Pemby anything or if I give her money for groceries. He has such a funny, sarcastic wit. I don't think so, but you never know how far they're going to take this mom thing. So now I have a new country house and a new mom all in one day. This is going to take some time to get used to. And then here's the funny part. I tried out my new superpowers this afternoon. I didn't go back to the DR. I zapped myself into Indian country right after leaving Sussex. So Sussex is the new address. I still have to eat, so yeah. I will drop into Sunny's place. I think the special tonight is flaming meatballs. I've got to see that. Bye for now. Love, the same old Michael. XXX000 Lynn and Emily. He's funny.
Yeah, he has a real wit. I mean, he just sort of, I would call it almost irreverent sometimes. He just says, like when he was going on the tours with Gabe, he says, Gabe, all due respect, sir, but are we going on another gloom and doom tour? I don't know if I can take any more.
Yeah, yeah. There's so much about the book. We don't have all time to go through everything, but please get this book, ladies and gentlemen. Go to The Star Still Shine. Let me say that again. Go to thestarstillshine.com. That is where you can get your copy. In addition to a very informative glossary, very good information, you also have an index. But let's talk about the Dream album, where you went out and about in the dream state and went to visit the town that Michael lives in. And it says, as I traveled, I felt compelled to remember as much detail as possible of certain locations. These drawings are my attempt at illuminating the messages in the book. The drawings are great.
Well, that was done by my son, James, who was a graphic artist as well,
mm-hmm.
and he
mm-hmm.
did the Dream Travel album. So to give credit where credit is due on him,
yeah.
he's quite a bit psychic himself, he's the artist of the family.
That was my question. It says, James Murray has been drawing most of his life as a young child, even before he could talk. He was creating little pictures to communicate with, quotes, he's a professionally trained artist and has several years' experience as an animator in graphic arts. I wondered if it was your brother. I didn't realize it was your son.
Son James, yep.
Gotcha. And a nightclub, Dr. Yes's home, and the office entrance. And this is all based on your ability to retain detail while you're up there. The infirmary, there's a psychiatrist talking about a new arrival. Yeah, it's pretty busy over there. I thank you so much for doing all this hard work and putting this together so that we could, even if we don't know Michael, we at least get a peek into his life and his afterlife and learn more. And I really do want to use this as a teaching tool. And I always say to my listeners and to my readers and my students, the more we learn, the more we realize we don't know. So there's such knowledge out there to be acquired, and this would be an excellent addition to anyone's spiritual library.
Well, I think so, and it's not just because I wrote it. That's something to do with it. I think it's a good teaching tool. Mm-hmm. But people should remember that they do create their own reality.
They do?
On the other side. Yes.
They do?
Yeah, they do, yes.
As above, so below.
Well, what happened, too, is that, just as an aside here, mm-hmm. what happened is that he went to visit some people that are newly crossed over. This was just a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And these people had been bombers, and they blew themselves up, and some other people, too. And they thought they were going to go to paradise. And what they were doing, when Michael saw them, they were camping out on stony ground. And he said, why are you here? And they called him an infidel and all kinds of bad names.
Right.
And told him he was to blame for them being there. And he said, well, all right. If you're meant to be in paradise, how come you're sleeping in drafty tents and on stony ground? And they said, well, we feel we are not having risen yet, and we didn't deserve a better life. So they that's their reality.
Yeah.
When they
They've
could
got
have
a
had,
lot to learn.
That's what they did. And they felt that they weren't worthy of a better life. So they were camping out in heaven.
Yeah.
Camping out in drafty tents and on stony ground.
Mm-hmm.
Their
and
own reality.
That's their state of mind, that violence
that's
is so
right.
ingrained in them. And it would take so long to deprogram all that and get them back to a pure essence and be a
that's
person
right.
of love that's just terrible. And what else would you like to tell the audience before we go, Bob? Any special message?
Well, there was one thing that you mentioned about your mother doing the spin.
Yeah.
And that tradition, it goes back to the Sufi tradition.
Oh yeah.
I did take some training working on being a Sufi, but I never completed that. But anyway, the Sufi tradition has it that you do the spin for spirituality, and you start off with that spin, and then you go around. And that's the basis for a lot of spirituality, for Middle Eastern philosophy and so on.
That makes sense to me.
Sufi,
because
Sufi philosophy, that's what your mother was doing.
Okay.
The spin.
Well, yes, and when you watch a child, you know, put their arms out and spin like that, I think, you know, as I analyze the energy of it, the reason it's so fun is that follows the law of energy, which is circular but also rises in a spiral. So that when you
yes,
experience
yes.
a paradigm shift or a revelation, your energy is going upward, but not in a straight way. It's going up in a spiral format. And when we spin around like that, we're basically putting our bodies in sync with the movement of energy, and it kind of breaks out of gravity, the gravitational pull, which I've hated since the day
yes.
I was born. And that is, gravity's the worst. But yeah, we get that spiral action going, and there's a tickle feel to it. The energy is so light and delightful that, yeah.
Yeah, the solar plexus,
that's something
yeah.
We can do that here in the physical to raise our vibrational frequency, right?
But I would say, you old guys and girls, don't try it without some safety nets.
You've got to put some cushions on the floor.
Something like that, yeah.
Well, it's such a pleasure to talk with you about this, and it's been a long time in the making, and I'm so excited that the day is now that we get to talk about this, and I would encourage everybody to get this book. It's called The Stars Still Shine, An Afterlife Journey by Robert Murray. Visit thestarsstillshine.com. Get your copy, read excerpts, join the mailing list, get the magazine, and absorb all this wonderful information Bob has taken the time to impart to us humans. Thank you so much, Bob.
Thank you.
If you ever want to come back on, you just let me know.
Okay, I will do that.
All right, dear.
Thank you.
You take care. All righty. All right, everybody, that's our show for today. I do hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Until next time, God bless and be at peace.